Welcome, Third Rock listeners, to the Branding Laboratory. I'm your host, Devo, Chief Experience Officer for the Brand Storyteller and the Fusion Creative Brands. And each week, I have the privilege of speaking with extraordinary leaders and entrepreneurs who are reshaping the way industries work. These conversations go way beyond the surface to explore the core philosophies, the lessons, and the challenges that define the brands that we admire today. And one of the greatest rewards of this podcast is the opportunity to share the insights of some of the brightest minds in business, people who are passionate about pushing boundaries and redefining what's possible. And as I always say, the stories we tell are the brands we build. And this show is a testament to the power of that concept. Let's dive in. You are listening to the Branding Laboratory. I am your host, Devo. And today we are going to talk a little bit about clarity and branding and the ability to stop pretending and just show up as who you are. This is the space where real leaders strip back their filters because I force them to by asking them really authentic and real questions. We're dropping buzzwords, we're dropping cliches, and we're just going to speak some truth today on the Branding Laboratory. Today's guest is a force like many other people I bring on this show. She is a TEDx speaker, a marketing agency founder, a business consultant, and a storyteller whose life's work has been built on one central theme: alignment. And we're going to break that down, what that actually means to her, what that means to us. Her name is Emily Green, and I met her on LinkedIn about a year and a half ago. Was just in love with some of the content she was putting out and her voice and the things she had to say, and I had to meet her. So she's here in Charlotte. We met up for coffee at my favorite coffee place, The Collective Cafe. Here's a shout out to them. They're in Matthews. Actually, don't go check them out because it's getting too crowded now. All of Charlotte's getting too crowded. But anyhow, we had a fantastic conversation. We have remained in contact ever since. I was recently a guest on her brand new podcast and just thrilled to bring her into the studio, the virtual studio today. And she has taught a room full of leaders. She has helped a bunch of different businesses grow and scale through her marketing agency. She recently sold her marketing agency, so I wanted to learn a little bit about that. She's raw, she's relatable, and she's here to talk about what it really means to live and lead with heart. And today we're not just talking about strategy. We're going to get into some identity, we're going to get into some clarity, some personal power, we're going to get into love, relationships, and how all of that shows up in your brand. So let's jump into the lab.
I am. What a day it is.
What are you drinking this morning?
Coffee. Yeah.
But are you a coffee? Are you a full-time heavy coffee drinker?
Inhale, exhale cup.
I like that. Should we do some breathing exercises before we get started?
I might fall asleep. That might get me too relaxed. So
I think that's the opposite of breathing exercises. It's supposed to energize you.
No.
You got to learn to do the two-finger, what's it called? Hatha breath.
That looks like you're doing something else.
I don't know if you're old enough, but you probably are because you learned about the old Seinfeld episode.
I used to watch Seinfeld. I'm 41, full disclosure. So
hell yeah.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
I thought you were probably middle 30s.
Thank you.
There's an episode on Seinfeld where Jerry pulls up to the stoplight and he itches his nose, but the girl next to him thinks he's picking his nose, and it turned out to be somebody he knew. And you've not seen this episode?
I haven't seen that. I just always think of like Soup Nazi, and then the one where Kramer was like washing stuff in the shower. Do you remember that one? That one, I don't know why, I loved that episode.
You'll appreciate this. I was never allowed to watch TV. We didn't discuss this on your episode. We didn't even have a television when I was a kid.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, my dad would rent a television once a year for the Super Bowl and from Rent-A-Center. And we would set up a TV in the living room and we'd watch, sit around and watch the Super Bowl. And I'm just like, that was the only time we had TV for a long time.
Wow.
And then my grandparents donated one of their TVs to us. So we did have a TV. But anyhow, the first time I ever really watched real television was when I went to college, outside of movies that my grandfather used to sneak me with. And Seinfeld was like the first show I'd ever actually seen, like sitcoms. And I was like, what the hell have I been missing out on here?
Yeah, it's so funny. Like you can still watch it now and it's just as funny as it was. Like, it's timeless comedy.
It is timeless comedy, but I will have to admit, I watched it recently again, and I didn't find it as hysterical as I did before, and I'm not sure why.
Oh, no.
I know.
Do you want to talk about that today? You want me to psychoanalyze you?
I already have too many therapy coaches that are doing that for me. Thank you. I'm really on a high right now. I don't need to be digressed any further into that hole right
okay.
now.
Okay.
Let's talk about you today. Let's talk about you. You've got a lot of stuff going on. You sold a business. You launched a new business. You are doing keynotes. You are coaching. Just give me a heads up on where you are right now. What are you doing right now? And then we'll go from there.
Yeah. So right now I've got my company, Emily Green LLC, and we focus on consulting, business coaching, like you just mentioned. I do a lot of public speaking. I'm doing a really awesome virtual conference in a week or two for the AIIP. So it's Association of Independent Information Professionals. And I'm talking about building unbreakable bonds, which I love. That whole topic is just really near and dear to me. I think it's really the secret sauce to business success, those relationships. And then I do a lot of producing of content. I've got two shows. I've got my podcast, Love Means Business, which you were on as a wonderful guest. And then I've got my learning series where I basically bring on different industry experts, and it's almost like a mini masterclass. So I love that teaching aspect. We have that in common, I feel like.
Building unbreakable bonds, maybe that will be the centerpiece of this conversation. What are some of the experiences that have taken you? Let me rephrase this. If you had to encapsulate yourself as a CEO, as a leader, first of all, how would you categorize yourself? What would you call yourself as a business leader, as an individual, as a human? What does that look like for you?
Don't put me in a box, Steve. I'm just kidding.
We are no fluff on this show. We're diving straight in. You're the one that's going to be laying on the sofa over here. I'm breaking down, analyzing.
Okay. If I had to give myself like a title, or like you're saying, as a CEO, this is actually funny because when I did my TEDx talk, we were asked to give like creative titles, not just CEO, not just founder, whatever. And I said incubator. Mm. So I still stand by that. I feel like I love to incubate ideas. When I had a team, I was really big into developing, mentoring, and even with like volunteer roles, leadership roles I do, it all comes from that. I love incubating things and making them grow into something more amazing than they started out.
So if you had to describe you in a sentence or two, what would you say about you? What's your 30-second elevator pitch on who you are right now?
Who I am as a person versus who I am in business. I don't know if that's where you want to go, but I think overall, I'm just trying to be a good human being who makes a difference in the world. So whether that's through the things I do personally, through being a really great mom, really great wife, really great pet mom, fur mom, to all the volunteering I do, but even going to business, it extends into that, like my core values, my mission, my heart, all of that is to help people. And whether that's through the consulting, coaching, and helping them with their business, or it's being someone that people can call up and I'll go to lunch with people and they can just vent to me for 30 minutes, 60 minutes, and I'll try to help them with whatever's going on. I just want to be a guiding light, a positive force. And I mean that sincerely with everything that I do.
You said something at the outset of that answer. You didn't know if I wanted you to talk more personally or more professionally.
Yeah.
And if you spent any time around me, you know that I think they are in essence one and the same.
Yeah, they're intertwined.
Yeah. Who you are as an individual shows up how you run your business. And I think that's pretty self-evident in what you've done. So if you were to think back in terms of the experiences that have shaped the kind of person you are, you said good human being, you're a guiding light. Can you talk about some of those experiences that have helped shape who you are today in terms of wanting to be always showing up as a good human, a servant, a being of light, yada, yada, yada? What does that mean? What are some of the experiences that got you from young Emily to 41-year-old Emily?
I think there's always those like key moments in life, defining moments, whatever you want to call enough moments. I talk about that in one of my keynotes, but I feel like I always kind of look back at some of those. There's that. And then there are some of these activities that I've done. We talked about sports, and I always look at that, like my time in athletics. I was really into running. I started running when I was 8 or 9 with my mom, and that became a bonding thing with us. And then I got, as with everything I do, I got competitive with it, and I wanted to be really good at it. And it really became an outlet for me. And at one point I wanted to do the Olympics. I used to watch this like Olympics VHS tape every morning.
You dropped the VHS. Nobody knows what VHS is anymore. Sorry.
Yeah, you had to actually rewind the tapes, and I would do that every morning. I'd watch it. But I think running or whatever sport people choose, it really did make me into the person I am today, because I still think about concepts that like coaches taught me. I had this one coach, Blair Porter. He was my like little league track coach, I guess is the way you put it. And he was amazing. Like he would run to our track meets, our track and cross country meets. Like we'd be driving and you'd see him running like 15 miles to the actual event. But he talked a lot about mindset. He would have us do faith running. We'd have to close our eyes and run with our feet. We had no shoes on, feel the ground. And as a kid, I was like in fourth grade or whatever. I loved that. I don't know. And I still think about that. Like he really used your mind with the physical. And he also had this thing where he told us to always look forward, always forward. And that was actually one of my core values with my agency, was always forward. And it's from him. And it's exactly what you think probably, but when you're running, if you spend too much time looking behind you to the side, if you're worried about where people are, instead of focusing on your own race, you're going to trip. You're going to get hit by a branch if it's cross country. Like, you know, it's not beneficial to you. And you might even get passed by the person you're worried about just because you're looking for them. So I always think about that with business, with different things I've done. When I get too caught up looking around, I'm like, don't do that. You're going to trip. You're going to get hit in the face with a branch. You know, you're going to slow down. Always forward. Don't worry about what other people are doing. So I feel like that has shaped me a lot. And just how hard it is to compete. I competed in college to get to that level, the dedication, the goal setting, all of that has carried over into how focused I am with business. And I think it's just really shaped me as a person. I think beyond that, obviously the things we talked about in my podcast, having to start my life over completely at 23, when I had to escape a pretty awful family situation and my entire reality was altered. I learned like everything I was told as a child was not true, almost everything. That was pretty crazy, having to rebuild everything at that age. But that is the foundation, I believe, for why I'm so passionate about marketing and branding and helping others really create whatever image, whatever life they want, because I know you can. That's the power and the beauty of it.
Can I break some of those things down?
Yeah.
If you don't mind, before we continue. And I don't want to go down to too many rabbit holes on this piece, but this always forward piece really resonated with me for a couple of reasons. And I want to challenge you on this, just to play devil's advocate, because I know in having multiple conversations with you, sometimes there's a fallacy in this idea of forward linear progress, because real growth is often messy. It's really, it's nonlinear. It's full of backward steps, pivots, pauses. So this whole idea of always forward, and I know where this comes from, this competition idea, this sports idea, but there are some ways to reframe that. Would you agree in terms of this always forward concept?
I think you don't want to take that so literally that when I say always forward, you're not acknowledging things you learned from your past.
Fair enough.
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is to not be worried. Don't be so worried about everyone around you. Comparison is the thief of joy, whatever. You've heard that, I'm sure. That's really the essence of that statement for me. It's not being so blind that you can't learn from your past. Because if you and I did that, if we were blind to our past, we wouldn't be where we are today.
Yeah.
But I think that the concept of, at least for me, I feel like a lot of people I see that are unhappy, that are not as successful maybe as they want to be, they're too worried about what everyone else is doing. So that's how I see that.
Yeah, I knew the idea. I just wanted to challenge you on a minute.
Yeah. Because
I love the idea of sort of evolution, sort of momentum, always growing, always expanding, always learning. But I do want to call that out, because one of the things that I see often with people, especially younger entrepreneurs that I work with, is that they have this idea that their trajectory should be a straight line between A and B. And if progress isn't fast enough, they get really quickly frustrated. Yeah. And I always have to draw them back in. And I'm like, it's not always forward. Sometimes it's sidestep. Sometimes we have to rework. I've literally restarted my business like four or five different times because what I was doing, well, I say restart, not fully restart, but what I was doing, the trajectory I was on wasn't exactly where I thought I wanted to go. So I had to reframe, I had to reorient. Just wanted to clarify that. In terms of...
I'm glad you said that because we've talked about offline, that I absolutely agree with that. And I think that's a good point too. When you are younger and you're working with people like that, you don't want to get discouraged and just give up because you aren't always moving forward every day. But I think that it's still good for them to understand, even if you have to redo something, it doesn't mean you have to completely backtrack. I guess that's my point with that too.
Yeah. I always love I think this is Buddhist or maybe it's from the Tao, this whole idea of be like water, finding your flow. And in every moment, how can you find that flow again? There's always going to be setbacks. That's the polarity of life.
Yeah, you can't control everything.
And so that probably will take me into my next question with you. You have had a lot of setbacks. You've had a lot of turbulence through your life, especially at an early age. And you were really forced to reframe your perspective and perception of the world and how it operated and all those things. Did you always know that you wanted to build something someday? And if I'm going to answer that, is that a yes or a no? You always thought you wanted to build something?
I would say so. Okay. If you would look at the things I used to do as a child, I was like writing plays and performing them in grade school. Yeah, I was always creating something. Yeah.
You may not have known that it would be an entrepreneur per se, but you always had it in the back of your mind that you wanted to build something of your own someday. Is that sort of a safe statement?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think that your turbulent upbringing and all of these sort of non-linear steps along the way have been fundamentally important to helping you become who you are today, build what you've built today? Like, they are a centerpiece of your story, right? There's an argument to say, but do you agree with that statement?
Yeah, that's why I say I don't have regrets. Like, I really don't, because if I hadn't been through these changes or these hurdles, whatever, I wouldn't be where I am today. And I feel like where I am today is a great place. So yeah, I agree with that for sure.
I heard this mind-blowing statement the other day. Actually, it wasn't the other day, it was a few months back, but this sort of idea that there are multiple versions of us existing simultaneously in all these different dimensional ideas. And I'm not going to go crazy into that rabbit hole. That's a different conversation. But I always love the idea that there is a different version of me out there floating through a different experience right now and having a different sort of outcome in a way. And so whenever I get into a situation where I'm like, man, I don't know how to get out of this one, I think there's another Devo somewhere that's already navigated this pitfall and he's already moved through. If that mother effer can do it, I can do it. So just quickly, any grain of truth to that? Does that resonate with you? Do you think about that, or you think like you are the only one going through this experience?
I don't know. My brain, I always go to a joke, but I'm just like, oh, that's where I sometimes like feel like I have multiple personality, multiple things going on in my head. But that can be a gift if you've got a lot of different voices helping you out. But I know that's not what you mean. So I'll try to be serious here.
That is one interpretation of it. There's a case to be made that if they talk about dreams being all these different types of, that could be an argument to be made. That is what those voices are. But I don't know. Just curious if you believe in that, because I'm going somewhere with this.
Yeah, I've never really thought about it like that. I have thought about like multiple dimensions, and I'm not saying I don't believe in that, because I'm not sure. I think there's a lot of things we don't understand, and I actually think that's really cool. That doesn't scare me. I think it's neat to think about that. But yeah, I think about sometimes if I had made slightly different choices. Like, I think about that a lot with the day that I left, like I escaped that situation. If I hadn't done that, I'm like, oh my God, where would I be? Like, you just think about these things that at the time you're not sure are that big of a deal, but they end up being such a huge deal in your life. It's interesting. If I had went this other way, I'd be this whole other person right now. Yeah.
I don't think anybody has frame of reference for that, because we talked about during the show when I was a guest on your. So just real quickly, explain what that means to people that are listening. When you walked away, we went.
Yeah. So when I was 23, I was in a really controlling situation with my family. I had a family business, all the things. And essentially I had to escape like a Lifetime movie and packed a bag, ran out, and was chased by my parents, all the things. And then over about a month's time, I was less than a month's time, about really just in about a day, I was kicked out of the business. I had no place to live. I didn't have a car. I was kicked out of my family, all of that. So I had to completely redo my life. And it was all because I wouldn't break up with my then boyfriend. My mom just hated him. And that's a common theme. That's more than we have time to talk about today. But that was pretty much my entire childhood, was just into adulthood, of just extreme control, extreme emotional, financial, mental abuse, and just came to a head because I grew up and I realized that it wasn't right. And I refused to obey. And once you stop saying yes, it doesn't work very well with certain people.
What did that teach you in terms of connection, communication, emotional resonance during those early days when you started building your first business? The experiences that you had as a child, the experiences that you had with your family, this trauma situation, what were some of the lessons that you took away from that and into building your new family, your new business, your new connections, your communication, your connection? Like, talk a little bit about that, if you don't mind.
I think it made me realize that you can create relationships that are so powerful. You can create your own family. You can create your own network. You don't have to rely on the resources or the people that you were born with. And for me, that was just such a cool thing, that I could really just create this community or this life that I wanted. And I didn't have to ever settle for what I was just given. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of opened up my mind to really empower me to, I won't say arrogance, but I've even been told that. They were like, oh, you just think you can do whatever you want. And I'm like, yeah, I do think I can do pretty much whatever I want if I work hard enough. I realize I'll never be a runway model. I'm only 5'3". There's certain limitations that I have, but I think most things I can do if I really want to do them. And that's a pretty empowering thing. I'm not afraid to go after things. I'm not afraid of rejection, because quite honestly, nothing could be scarier or sadder or harder than what I went through with my family. It just couldn't be. So that has given me a courage I don't think a lot of people have.
The arrogance piece, I'm just self-confidence. I don't really think there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with
but
that.
But what I'm hearing, what I'm hearing from you is a sense of purpose around everything you've done at this point. And deeper than the trauma, deeper than the turbulence, deeper than any of the experiences, is it gave you a sense of purpose around stuff? Was that a fair statement?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's why I am so passionate about helping others, is that I couldn't have gotten out and been where I am today without the help and support of my friends and my brother. They really stepped in and gave me a place to live, gave me a place to work, helped me with getting a car. And so I want to be that support. I want to be, again, that positivity or whatever to help others so that they can live a life that they choose. So I'm very much about that statement, live a life that you choose, not what someone chooses for you.
I love that. You've spoken really publicly about boundaries and toxic relationships and how love can be misused. You have a whole podcast centered around that now. How did those early experiences affect your work and your brand when you first got going?
It's really the whole motivation for my TEDx talks was what first started with that. And then the TEDx talk evolved into my podcast. But I think just seeing the effect that weaponizing love, which is what I talk about in my TEDx talk, and the trauma, whatever, that can happen from having love that's super conditional and super just not positive and restrictive. It gives you this kind of, like you've talked about, fight or flight, like your entire life, you're always in this like anxiety state. And then when you're free of it, you realize, wow, the fog lifts and you start like just seeing everything. And that was a really interesting thing for me to experience. I'm still experiencing it all the time. I don't think it goes away, but that definitely influenced what I wanted to do with my career. And marketing is such an interesting choice, because with marketing, it is psychological, a lot of it. And it is about controlling messages. And so if you were brought up in a household or a situation where you didn't feel like you were ever really in control, it's really empowering to have a career where you're controlling messages and you're helping other people do that. So I think that's why I'm so drawn to that, and why I also love storytelling, because I can help people have a voice. Mm-hmm. And everyone should have a voice.
Everyone should have a voice. I want to go back to weaponizing love. Can you elaborate a little bit on what that means?
Yeah, so that was the title of my TEDx talk. And it really went into very briefly. I could only talk for 9 minutes. Couldn't get way into it. But that moment where I escaped, and then I talked about like the three signs that love is being used as a weapon against you, which if you wanted to break that down more, it could be signs of narcissism, controlling relationships, toxic relationships. But I talk about one of the signs is you're not allowed to have your own opinion. Another one is you're fearful of the person. And the third is you're isolated. You become more and more isolated. So those three things are really, when I broke it down, the things that I had happened my entire life. And I feel like those are like very telltale signs that you're in a relationship that love isn't being used in a positive way. And I wanted to be able to identify that so that I could hopefully share that with someone that maybe needs to hear it.
I'm going into this direction of what broke you open. Was there a moment you realized in this whole journey that you had to choose yourself over these comfort zones? And maybe they weren't even that comfortable, but still in a stable house, in a home, whatever it was, there was a lot of things going on. But was there a pivotal moment where you just stepped back and said, okay, this is it. I'm done. I have to move on.
It happened over about 6 to 8 months where my freedom just got more and more restricted. And it got to the point where I really couldn't do anything. I felt like I was truly like a prisoner. Mm-hmm. And the day that I left, like I escaped, I let my parents know that I was going to move in with my friend. I said, I can't do this anymore. I'm going to move in with my friend. I think it's best for everyone. And then my mom went on this, a campaign. I don't know how else to put it. And she called my friend's mom, my boyfriend's mom, and told them awful things, like lies that were just so bad. I can't even repeat them. And my boyfriend at the time was crying. Like, he called me up. He was so upset. And I just had this epiphany because it was exact same things I had seen her do to other people my entire life. And I was like, oh my God, she's doing this to me. And you never think they're going to do it to you. And I was like, wow, this is exactly what she did to my brother. This is what she did to all these other people. And I thought, I know now exactly what's going to happen to me because I've seen what happens. And so I just thought, I can stay and I know exactly how my life will be. I'll be stuck here, miserable, or I can leave. I have no idea what I'm going to do, but I can't do this other route because I don't want that life. So I just left. It was like I had this just moment I still remember in my head. It was like I saw the two paths and I was terrified. I was shaking. I was so scared to leave, but I just knew I had to find out what I could do.
You said something, you never think that they're going to do it to you.
Yeah.
I think that's worth noting because I grew up in a very abusive situation as well. And I think sometimes I'm talking for myself for a minute here. Yeah. I think sometimes early on, you just think that's normal. So you don't actually realize what's happening until you have some self-awareness around, wait, there's actually a dichotomy here. There's a different way to live your life. I would for the first time I was around, because I was never social. I was schooled from home. The first time I was actually around other children, this is a true story, was really when I was 12 years old. And I started engaging with other friends, parents, and seeing that there was a different way to do things. And I was like, bro, this is not something I had any context before. Right. I always had in the back of my mind that this was a little whack.
That's so funny. That's what happened with me too, though. When I think about it, it was when I got close to my then boyfriend and his family, and I saw how they interacted and I saw how he treated me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my, you just realize it's not normal. Mm-hmm. Like, it gives you a reference.
Totally.
That was honestly a lot of it too, that I was like, wow, like I have this person being so loving and his family was so loving. And I was just like, this isn't right. This is so different than what I'm used to.
There's this saying I use often, perception is reality. And so my reality was based upon a perception I had that was just like a controlled context similar to yours. Yeah. How did that shift that you had, how did that shift change how you show up in your business for your clients, for now your family, and now for yourself? Can you explain a little bit around that?
I think I'm more empathetic than a lot of people. I think it's made me just a lot more open to what people are going through. I try not to be as judgmental. I do think that it's made me kinder. Like, not saying I'm the kindest person ever. I definitely have a edgy side to me sometimes. But I think if I hadn't went through all that, I could have been maybe not a very nice person because I am so competitive. So it has given me a little bit of a, I don't want to say softer side, but like, I am very empathetic because I know how hard it is to go through things like that. And it's made me so appreciative of the love that I have now and the relationships that I have. And that's why I'm fiercely protective. Like, I have this circle of friends that are like my family, and I'll travel all across the country to see them. Like, I will make all effort to be there for them because love and relationships that are like very positive, I just think you have to nurture those. I don't know.
This is where I was going in the beginning, this sort of whole idea of personal and professional intersection, and why when you are able to connect the dots between how you show up as an individual in your personal life, it's really important because it completely segues into how you show up in your business life and how you get clients and how you build your relationships and how you build your collaborations. And so this whole idea of around, I've said this before, I had a coach many years ago, a business coach, who told me that I should always keep them in silos. And I always didn't know a lot about the whole idea. This was many years ago, and it just never really felt right to me. I'm like, but doesn't it make sense that if I am a type of person in my personal life this way, that's going to show up in my professional life? So if I have bullshit over here that I haven't dealt with, it's somewhere, shape, or form is going to show up over here.
That's true.
Yeah. So that's when, before I started going into building my business, I really took a step back. We talked about there's no such thing as a straight line. And I started working on myself as an individual and how I showed up, because I realized there was a lot of things that were fragmented, a lot of beliefs that were misaligned, and a lot of values that I hadn't clearly clarified. And they were showing up in how I responded to criticism, or how I viewed money or scarcity, or how I built relationships and this whole idea. And I was like, dude, all of this is completely interconnected. And that, for me, we're talking about shifts. When I started working on me as an individual, that's when I started seeing the real shifts in my business life.
I agree. I agree with that wholeheartedly. And I think that you have to put the work in. I did a lot of therapy, read a lot of books. Can't remember any of the names. If you ask me, I don't remember the names of them, but I read a lot of stuff. And just like you said, I had to come to Jesus moment with myself, honestly, right before I met my husband. And I was just like recognizing patterns in myself that I was like, I got to fix this stuff. Like, I got to work on this. It's holding me back. And you don't even necessarily realize that sometimes. And you start to see these patterns. And for me, that was like an aha moment a little bit that I needed to work on some things.
The patterns is a mind fuck, if I may say so for a second, because a lot of times, we talked about context, we get caught up in these day-to-day activities and it just gets us on a treadmill. And if we don't take the time to step back and actually look at feedback or have some introspection about how we're showing up or take a look at experiences that happen throughout the day and really start to analyze them, we don't really know who we are in the world. Right. It's really important to have a very crystal clear understanding of who you are, where are you now, where do you want to be, what do you believe in, what are your values. And so one of the things that I love about you is you teach people to live and love their values. Values are like one of the most important things to me. Who are you as an individual, and what do you believe in? What do you believe in? I'm actually writing a book on that very topic right now.
Oh, I can't wait to read it. That's
I know, I'm so really excited about it. But what does that really mean to you, live and love your values?
I think it's what you said. It's you're not just, here's work, Emily, here's Emily at home. It's living, to me, is this is who you are at your core. These are values that are ingrained in you. Everything you do, this is going to come out. And for me, that would be some of these like core values or words or themes are the kindness, being very passionate, giving, connecting. So like some of these words, like you're going to, I find that in everything that I do. And I feel like when you can, first of all, define that for yourself, figure out what are those things. And then if you can align those with what you do professionally, you're going to do so good, so well. You're going to just shine.
Are you able to clearly state what your core values are?
Yes. I don't have them memorized. They're on my website. I should have them memorized. But the words that I just said are the themes. Themes around love. So loving who you are, loving what you do, loving the clients, the work, all that. The kindness piece and giving back. That's huge for me. So everything I do is in some way I want to be giving, whether it's with the services that I do or advice, whatever. And then the connection piece. That with my new business is huge. Every interaction, everything that I do is an opportunity to connect. So that's one of my core value statements. And everything that, like, between speaking, consulting, my podcast, my learning series, all of that is at the essence connecting. And that is such a big part of who I am. And I think it is because if you want to dial it real back, it's because I did feel so sheltered as well as a child. And connecting to me is liberating, being able to connect with people.
What are some of your non-negotiables personally, professionally? What are some of the things that you draw the line in and you're like, no way, it's not going to happen?
Okay, so I'm stealing this from my days working at Target, but I don't work with jerks. They have a no jerk policy, Target does, that I thought was amazing. So if I feel like someone has those jerk tendencies, I will not work with them. And one way that I've been able to discover that pretty quickly is when you go through your core values. I had that with the agency. I'd always go through those in the discovery phase and I would watch the reaction. And I had a couple that were like, we want an agency that's like a bulldog and they're going to call and they're going to do this and that. And I'm like, that's not us. It's Grace Communications, literally. Like, that's not, you're barking up the wrong tree. So I think that's one, honesty. I like people that are very honest. Don't do passive aggressive with me. That actually makes me angry. I would rather you're just passive or aggressive. Do not go in between. That pisses me off because I can't work with that. I want to be productive. And if I can't have honesty and directness, I can't really help you. I think those are some of them. And you have to like animals for me because I just love animals. So
one of the reasons we get along is, and if I may for a second, I'm not trying to make this show about me, but I have some non-negotiables and I'd just like to get your opinion on them. And
sure, I would love to hear them.
In no particular order, it's no pretending ever. I want you as you. I don't give a fuck of your flaws. I just want to hear who you are. Self-awareness is mandatory. You have to be self-aware. If you are not self-aware, I cannot engage with you because that's just going to show itself. That's going to show up and rear itself in all number of ways, from responsibility to accountability to just being able to show up in an honest capacity. Never copy, create. I understand there's no originals of everything, but
be inspired.
Have some moxie around having some unique value in something, even if it's your own unique spin. One of the things that's really been big for me, and I learned this early on in my relationships intimately, is no energy vampires. I will not allow energy vampires into my life.
That's a good one.
And as soon as I see them, Emily, I'm like, I know exactly who you are. I recognize it, etc. I'm a huge advocate for critical and emotional intelligence. You have to be able to read the room and understand how you show up. But you need to be able to understand that everybody comes at a situation with different constructs, and you have to be able to interpret that really quickly. Purpose over popularity has always been a big one for me. I never realized what that was, but early on throughout my life, I've never been like the center of attention, or I've never been like the cool kid. I just did my own thing, and I feel like you
were the cool kid. I don't believe that.
No, man, I was never the cool kid. I was just played sports. I did my own thing. I was in theater. I had nerd friends. I had athletic friends. I just was like, whatever. I don't care about this kind of stuff. That it's never mattered to me to be popular. I just want to show up and add value.
I think that's why you probably were popular, is my point.
I don't know.
That's probably why people liked you.
I don't know. And then finally, my other one, I think, is, and there's probably many more, but you have to be willing to put in the work and the effort. Yeah. And I coach a high school lacrosse, and I had this conversation last night with my girls. We play two of the biggest teams next week, and we're actually having a pretty successful season. They've never been successful, so I'm very happy about what's going on right now. But we play two of the biggest teams next week, and some of these teams are like college-level girls already. And everyone's just like, everything's just a joke. Everything's just very casual. There's no sense of urgency. There's no sense of work. And I'm like, you guys don't understand what it takes. If you want to just be an average Joe team, carry on. But if you want to win, which you all told me you do, then it requires work. You have to do the work. Let me stop there. There was a list of five or six. Do all of those resonate with you? Do you have any deference on them? Anything that you disagree? Anything you want to add to that?
Love your list. Love all of it. I would add one more thing for me is like a sense of humor and playfulness. I freaking love that. And I find people that are too serious, like they can't laugh at themselves or have fun with things. Life's too short. And I just love to be goofy and silly. And it used to be part of my personality. I would hide and I would think it wasn't branded or professional. I don't do that anymore. I found actually people like that, especially with my speaking stuff, they enjoy the goofy, silly Emily. So it's not something I have to like hold back anymore.
I love that one. Have a sense of joy about stuff. I think I got off track for a while many years ago where I lost that sense of joy. Everything was just like very serious to me. And so I really appreciate you saying that. Is there a truth or a phrase or something, an Emily-ism that you find yourself saying over and over again to people?
Besides always forward, which I guess I stole from my coach. Sorry. Giving him credit though. I say give people space and grace, which I think that's a common phrase, but it's something I started saying because my agency was called Grace Communications. But I would say that a lot, like when team members were struggling with a client that was being difficult, I'd be like, give them space and grace. If I, you know, was talking to them and they were having some other issue, I'd be like, remember space and grace. It really puts things in perspective a lot of times, in that sometimes you need time. So sometimes you need that space. And the grace part of it, because grace has so many different meanings. But in that context, it's really put yourself in those shoes, the shoes of the person you're having issues with, and try to understand where they're coming from. That's always going to help you in any situation if you can have that empathy. And then a step further is that authenticity. So then once you can do that, you understand where they're coming from, it usually would allow us to come up with solutions that made it a positive. So all about spinning it into that positive.
Mixing those two, space and grace, with keeping your clients on track is a fine line that you have to balance. Uh-huh. So how do you help your clients get really clear and purposeful on what they stand for when maybe they're feeling lost, or maybe they're feeling off track, or maybe they're just not moving forward at the pace you think they are capable of? How do you manage space and grace with keeping them in alignment with purpose?
That could be very, very challenging sometimes, depending on the client's personality. But the thing that I found, what we would always do, we'd always have a discovery onboarding phase. And part of that would be putting together a marketing plan and audit. And in that, if they didn't already have their core values and their mission and vision defined, we would go through like exercises and help get that defined within that marketing plan, also with goals. And that really helped everyone get on the same page. So it's almost like having this outline of, hey, we're getting off track. Let's go back to remember what we talked about. And then just having routines. I'm very organized. I'm a bit, maybe OCD a little bit with it, but I enjoy that part. So I would always put routines in place, like a weekly, monthly, biweekly call. We'd always have that already ironed out in the contract, even. We're going to do this. Mm-hmm. And having communication routines that are, you tell them up front, that eases everyone. And it sets the boundaries too. So you say, here are my office hours. Here's how we're going to communicate in these ways. And make sure you follow it.
I think a lot of people think that those words you just dropped a second ago, mission, purpose, values, all those different things are just cliche buzzwords. But really break those down for me, if you will, for a minute.
Yeah.
What do those really mean for a business so that they have clarity on those? What does it give them by understanding what my mission is or what my values are or how I want to show up, et cetera, et cetera?
It can be used flippantly. And if you use it in that way and you haven't actually put enough thought into it, then yes, it can be completely useless in a buzzword and mean nothing. But I look at it as almost like a North Star. Yeah. So it helps you from getting lost. And you're going to have so many things thrown at you when you own a business or you're in leadership, even if it's not your business, you're going to have just so much thrown at you between people quitting, like new opportunities, clients, client upheaval. You're so much that it's so easy to get off track. Mm-hmm. And if you have put the time in to define the mission, the vision, the values, at least for me, it made decisions so easy. Before I had those, it was hard because it's, I want to do everything. I want to do this. I just want to be everywhere. But then it's like, if it doesn't fit in those buckets, if it doesn't make sense, then why am I doing it? Yeah.
What is your mission?
I don't actually have one. Thanks for putting me on the spot. I don't actually
what I
have
do.
It completely defined for my new business. It's a work in progress, but essentially.
Let me stop you there.
Yeah.
I think this is a really important intersection to call out because you said something earlier about flippant missions.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people just put a bunch of fancy words on a piece of paper and they're like,
yeah,
I'm done. So let's talk about you for a minute and what you're doing right now with your life, because you are not going in a straight line. You've made a lot of different shifts. You've changed your trajectory. Your North Star has moved into a different sky, if you will.
Right.
What at the core of Emily Green do you want to accomplish right
teaching.
Now when you look at your life?
Teaching. My mission right now is really teaching.
There you go.
But I don't have a statement yet. So I've been working on figuring that out, but teaching is at the core of what I'm focused on. I feel like that's where my heart is and everything I'm doing flows through that. So I don't have a statement. That is essentially everything is focused on that. So I feel like it's important to have that so you're not just spiraling into everything. You got to have some sort of like strategic theme or something. Yeah.
Oh, I love that you said that. And I love that we took the time. Thank you for humoring me to just get that out in the open, because I think a lot of times people think they have to have this long banded cliche derivative, all these thesaurus driven notes in there. And when you do that, you get lost. So what I tell everybody is like, dude, just slow down for a minute.
Yeah.
Slow down. At the core of who you are right now, if you had to walk away from this planet today, what would you say you are? What would you say you solve? What would you say you give to the planet? So I'm going to ask you right now, if whoever you believe in showed up, UFOs, aliens, God, Jesus, whomever, and said, Emily, your time is up. You have one gift to give to the planet. What is the gift you're giving back?
Love. It would always be love for me.
And love centers around you want to serve first. You want to give back to society in some way, shape, or form. So I love that. If you had to describe your brand, and I'm losing my video here for a second, so forgive me, I'm back. If you had to describe your brand without talking about the services, without talking about any deliverable that you give, how would you define what your brand is?
Yeah.
Sorry, let me interrupt one more time. Sorry. So love, teaching, are at the crux of what you do. Define your brand in those
terms. Love, teaching, and connecting. Mm. I think it's a crossroads of all of those things. And I think love it's in the name of my podcast. Love Means Business. It's the only tattoo I have is the word love. So that is huge for me. And it wasn't really something with my agency that I focused on, because with agency, it's the clients. Mm. What I do now is more my personal brand. Mm. So it is focused on who I am. Mm. And so it is that intersection, and I have the core values on my website. I don't have them memorized, which is funny, but I'm still in the new phase with this business, but it's where connection, love, and teaching intersect. I think that's really like the essence of my new brand.
And I don't know that you have to have those fleshed out fully right now. As long as you have a direction that you think you want to take this, and especially if you're launching a new business, it's really important to understand, okay, at the end of the day, what problem do I solve for my clients, and how am I going to go about doing that? In terms of your business and your new business and your new trajectory and all these different things you're doing, is there an emotional experience that you want people to feel when they engage with you, whether it's in a conversation, whether it's on your podcast, whether it's right now? When people listen to Emily Green after they listen to this episode, what do you want them to feel about you?
I think that with everything I'm doing right now, almost everything, sometimes I just like to make people laugh, but it's that no matter what happens to you, whether it's a dark moment, a light moment, whatever, there's always something you can learn from it. And I want people to understand that I truly believe you can spin anything into a positive because you can learn from it. So that's really everything I'm doing, every speech I do, all of my different shows I'm producing. I don't do a lot with clients anymore. So that's also what's different about what I do now versus when I have agency. It is more about producing my own content, but it is really about those nuggets, those lessons that I feel like you can get from anything. Yeah. And I want people to have that spirit and not be discouraged if they're going through a hard time.
That's why I made the shift in my business. I was an agency owner like you. I sold that business and I really started realizing that I am the brand. What I teach and what value I bring to the table is centered around how I show up in the world. And I feel like I've had some really cool experiences. I've figured out a lot of things and how to do things the wrong way and now the right way. So I shifted completely into this helping people build their personal brand for that reason. And I want to move into the next space as we close out the rest of the show.
Sure.
Good timing so far. At the end of the day, we have to make money. And that's why we're here. Money is the currency that navigates our lives. Unless we're just going to be paupers and give away everything for free. I'm a firm believer in the more resources in the form of finances, in the form of opportunities and collaborations, which is another form of currency, it enables you to do bigger and better things, right? And so at the end of the day, whether you're a coach or whether you're a collaborator or you're using a love-centered approach, you still have to be able to make money to do those things.
That is absolutely true.
Yeah. So how do you, I want to talk about how you turn a value, how you turn an emotion of a mission, if you will, of kindness, of love, of joy, and how do you turn that into actually making money for people, for yourself? And so you've built and you sold a marketing agency. Congratulations by that. And now you're running your sort of your own personal brand. How did those two identities differ in terms of running a corporation, running an agency versus now building a personal brand? We're going to start with that question.
There's similarities and differences because if you are a founder of a business, if it's an agency or any similar type of business, if the founder is still the image in the face. And I will say that I definitely was very much front and center with Grace Communications. But the difference was I didn't make it about me like you do your personal brand. I would really focus on the clients. I focused on the team. Mm. It was really about this brand having a life that was bigger than me. That's why I didn't use my name for my first business. Now, I've pivoted or really, I feel like stepped into this because it became a thing before I started it. I was starting to be thought of separate from my agency because of all the speaking I was doing. The TEDx talk gave me a platform to pivot into for my personal brand. And I think it's interesting, like when you're saying like, it's not linear, it's evolve, all of that. But I look at that as my next evolution was stepping into that space. And I wouldn't have felt comfortable doing that if I hadn't already had success with it before. Does that make sense? Like I already had that base, people coming to me, asking me to do these paid speaking things, asking me to tell my story, asking me for advice of how to scale, of how to do all those things, naturally grew into another business that is my name because it's just me.
So where I'm going with this question is a lot of people are like, okay, personal brand, that sounds narcissistic, that sounds vain. How is that going to actually help me? So how does building a personal brand around what you're doing, how is that going to be monetizable? How is that going to enable you to create revenue, whether you're helping somebody else in it or helping yourself?
You got to still have your niche. You've got to figure out a way to stand out. And that's why I always say, like with my podcast, it's not just a leadership podcast. It's not just a relationship podcast. It follows a very specific storyline that makes it unique. I don't know any other podcast that has the storyline that I have. And I think with marketing to be monetizable, to stand out, to be different, you need to have a different brand or a different concept, like the creative piece that you talked about. So I would say if someone wants to build a personal brand, how are you going to be different? You can't just say, I'm going to be Devo, Tyndall, Inc. or whatever, and that's it. Okay, that's great. But what about you is different? What are you going to showcase that is going to make someone want to be working with you versus working with someone else? Monetizing it, that for me with the podcast comes in sponsorships, comes in views, comes in endorsements, partnerships. With the speaking, it's workshops, it's outreach, it's all those things. But the monetization part comes after you've done the work of establishing that you're a really good speaker and that you have really good content. So that's the basis still. You have to be really good at what you're doing and have a very marketable, different product, whether it's a speech, podcast, whatever that's going to be, it has to be different.
I think a couple of things I heard you say without actually saying the word is I think a lot of people don't realize that In today's marketplace, with the opportunities we have with social media and digital media and marketing and being a speaker and showing up on platforms, you have an audience of, what, 7.5 billion people that you could potentially expose your corner, your ecosystem of the world to. And in the process of building a personal brand, and having clarity around that, right? The problems that you solve, your mission, your love, your kindness, your servitude, et cetera. That clarity cuts through the noise first and foremost, right? It puts you in a different category than everybody else doing the exact same thing, right? So whether you have an e-commerce, or whether you have a product, or whether you're a speaker, or whatever it is, having some clarity around your mission, your values, all those sorts of things, it cuts through the noise. But I think the other biggest piece for me on a personal brand, if I may say, is that you're starting to build trust faster. Because you're showing up as Emily Green and people get to see the real Emily Green.
Yeah.
And in the process of building this trust, you're starting to attract the right type of people that you want to work with because not everybody is your market. You are not cut out for everybody. And at least I'm speaking for myself. Not everybody is my ideal client and not everybody can put up with my sort of like in your face, rebellious nature. I don't give a fuck about anything for the most part. And not a lot of people can handle that. And so it's really important to understand who you are and how you show up in the world. So I love the things you said. What do you think in terms of working with entrepreneurs now and solopreneurs and small businesses, what do you think they don't understand about building something? It's like the things that they're missing out on when you work with people the most.
I think sometimes they just want to grab at what they think is going to be the quickest money maker for them. Or they, like, again, they'll see someone doing something and they're like, oh, I want to do that. Like, they'll see these things on social, and I don't want to get off soapbox, but there's a lot of fake news stuff on social. You've got these people saying, I only work 4 hours a week and I make $1 million and I did that in 6 weeks or whatever. And it's, no, you didn't. Or you'll see people that say, I made $100,000 last week off my affiliate programs. And that person did not do that. So there's a lot of false information that I think people see that then makes them think they can do these things and they don't understand the small steps, the small things you have to do, or even you have to be able to back up some of this too. Like, I couldn't have a successful personal brand if I hadn't had a successful business that I built and sold first. I firmly believe that. I'm not saying all people have to follow that model, but for me, I don't think I would have been able to be where I am if I hadn't done that. Because people know I can back up what I'm talking about. There's nothing that I talk about that I have not done. So there's that sense of like walking the walk, talking the talk that I think a lot of people don't do. They just want to go right into the making of the $100,000 with a course. And it's, but have you done those things? You know what I mean? Have you actually put the time in? So
I love the thing you just said. I wrote a blog piece last week and I got a lot of pushback on LinkedIn. I wasn't trying to be provocative or disruptive. I just genuinely believe this. I wrote that social media is the next genocide.
And I saw that and I liked it.
Yeah. There were a lot of people that didn't like that I used the word genocide and I had to explain what the word means. And I'm not going to go into that. But social media is a catch-22 for me because I do believe it's a pariah on one hand. But if you can learn to responsibly work with social media and actually add real value in a capacity of connecting and collaborating, you can create some really lasting and sustainable impact using social media. And so I tried to explain this. And I'm just curious, how do you manage that? What's your viewpoint on that? On one hand, it can literally rupture your entire life. But on the other hand, if you can learn to be responsible with it, it's like anything else. Like, it's whether you drink alcohol or whatever you do. Like, dude, have some balance, man. Have some lines where you have some discipline. And you're like, I just can't. Like, for me, social media, and I'm just throwing this out there, I would never have been able to do anything that I'm doing today in this world right now without social media, without digital, without a digital ecosystem. But at the same time, I'm very careful to not be consumed by it. And I've done a really good job of setting standards and disciplines around that. Talk to me a little bit about from your point of view, because there's an argument to be made that you and I are basically in the same mold with that, right?
Yeah.
How do you manage social media without allowing it to completely destroy you?
That's a big burnout issue. I think if you are a marketing agency like I had that does social media management, because you just get so burned out seeing all the things. But to your point, like all the speaking engagements I get are from social media, almost all of them. So it is so powerful. But I think for me, what I try to do is I try to separate the authentic from the inauthentic. And there are some people, to me, once I'm like, they're not authentic, I put them in the entertainment category. I'm like, okay, they're entertaining, but I'm not going to take anything they put out there as more than entertainment. And then there's the people that I feel like show both sides. They're showing the beauty, the beautiful things, the positive things, but they're keeping it real too. And then I try to do the same thing. I try to make sure that I am showcasing, obviously you're wanting to sell. I don't want to seem like a hot mess and no one wants to work with me, but I also want to be open and vulnerable sometimes to show that I'm a human being and I'm not perfect. And I'm not going to say that in 1 week of creating a course, I've made $100,000, right? I'm not going to put lies, blatant lies out there just to get sales. And it's that authenticity piece. So I don't know if that helps, but for me, I put those blinders on. And if it's clear dishonesty, I'm just like, nope, you're going in that other category.
I have an analogy for social media, and this may or may not offend anybody, but I see it like alcohol personally. I love to have a good drink of whiskey. It's my thing. Like I love trying good whiskeys, but I also know that alcohol is a poison. And if you do too much of it, it's going to literally kill you.
True.
It's a true story. And so I'll often like literally fast from alcohol. I'll literally take 6 months where I will not have a single drink just to show my body, train my body that I'm capable of managing what it is. But I still enjoy going to a bar, being in a social situation and having a really good glass of bourbon or whiskey. And I see social media as the same thing. If you can learn to harness its power and use it eloquently, emotionally, responsibly, add some value, show up, and not be consumed by it, because you spend like hours scrolling through and just caught up in it. So
waste of your life, in my opinion, if you do too much of it. So it is like alcohol. It's great enough.
All right. Last 5 minutes. This has been a fun conversation. Thank you. This is going to be a lightning round, so we can't go too far. If you had to describe where you're going to be 5 years from now in one word, what is that word?
One word.
Five years from now.
Evolving.
I love it. A lie you wish you could erase from people's understanding of everything.
Don't judge someone just by how they look.
You talked about it in the earlier the show we did an Emilyism. I want one more Emilyism from you as you step into this new business of yours. What's a mantra you want yourself to live by? How about that?
I already told you mine too. It's always forward and give space and grace. I don't really have any others besides those two. My two main ones.
I'll let you off the hook on that one. Public speaking, showing up on stages, showing up on webinars, etc. Is this a personal passion or is this a powerful business tool?
It's both for me. It is both. I love it, but it's also very strategic as far as growing my brand.
Is there such a thing as giving too much?
I don't like saying it that way. I think you can give strategically, but yes, I think if you're giving to a point that it's hurting your business and it's hurting your life, then you're giving too much.
Love it. Any last words for anybody listening to the show? Where can people find you? Anything that you'd like to share? You have any products that you'd like to promote on the show?
Just, I would love if you have an event, you need a great speaker, look me up, find me on LinkedIn, look at my website, emily-green.com, and I'd love to work with you.
Speaking of speakers, did you see that we launched our first retreat?
No, I didn't see that.
Come on, man. Take me out of the spam folder.
Oh, it was an email. Sorry.
All
your posts. Come on. I'm engaging with you.
November 3rd through the 7th, we have our first retreat coming out.
That's my birthday, November 3rd.
Happy birthday. You come to the retreat in Mexico then.
Mexico. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm going to give you some information on it. Emily, this was a great show. I really appreciate you taking the time. Really, truthfully, how can people connect with you?
They can connect with me. Go to my website. Like I said, emily-green.com. That's probably the best way because you can find all my socials there. And I've got my podcast has different socials than my business and my personal. So just go to my website. You'll find everything there.
And we're going to put all that once we produce the show. It'll be in the show notes below. You can find it here, there, wherever. I don't even know where people show up on the screen here. But I'm just trying to give you a diagram. Emily, thank you for your time. It's been an awesome conversation.
It's always fun talking to you.
That was a fantastic episode. Thank you, Emily. I really appreciate your time and your energy and your candor. You are the perfect epitome of what the Brandon Laboratory stands for. And that's a wrap for this episode. So if Emily said something that really hit you, don't scroll past it. Don't just like zoom on. sit with it, share it, and maybe let it move you and inspire you to do something bigger and better. And if you want to connect with her, she is a fantastic individual, just a great human to know and have in your inner circle if you're so lucky. One of the things that I think the biggest takeaway that I have for this show is that brands that resonate with you don't just come from a marketing playbook. They come from the inside out. And building something that is centered around who you are, whether it's a large agency or a small agency or an entrepreneur or a solopreneur, you are the flagship. You are the leader of that business. And how you show up and how you view the world, again, if you're managing people that work for you, is going to show up in your business. If you're ready to stop hiding behind tactics and you want to start building something bold and irreverent and honest and fully you, that's exactly what I do. So here's my shameless plug. I help founders, I help CEOs and creators and coaches turn clarity into connection. That's just what I do. And connections into businesses that actually matter. So let's build a brand that the world feels emotionally. Let's get together and chat about how you want to show up in the world. What gift do you have? How do you want to give something back that's going to make a difference? So happy to chat with you. Until next time, stay bold. Stay real and keep building something, because the world needs to know what you have to offer. Thanks for tuning in to the Branding Laboratory. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Connect with us on social media for more branding tips and insights. And remember, your story matters. Until next time, keep building and sharing your unique brand story. I'll see you soon.